You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Welcome to 1001 True Stories. My name is Brian Tremblay, your host. Thank you for joining me. They say everyone has a story, but is it a story that could have ended badly? Did you ever have an incident in your life where you just thought you weren't going to make it out of the situation you were in? Did you have an encounter with someone or something that no one would have believed that happened to you? That's what happened to my guests. Today's show, my guest is Russ Roberts. He's a sailor, pilot, and author. Captain Russ Roberts says it's not about the adventure, it's about collecting experiences. Russ takes us on a harrowing journey across the Atlantic Ocean as he and another pilot ferry two planes to Cologne, Germany, to their awaiting buyers. As Murphy's Law states, if something can go wrong, it probably will. Picture this. You're flying alone, it's dark, you're over the North Atlantic, and your engine starts to cough and sputter. You have two choices. Make it to Greenland or ditch in the water. What do you choose? Good day, folks, and thank you for joining us today on 1001 True Stories. I have a wonderful guest here that is going to keep you regaled with his story, and I'm going to let you introduce himself and what he's all about. Take it away, sir.
Brian. Nice to be here with you today.
Thank you.
Russ Roberts. I'm a retired airline pilot. Been off the line now for 3 or 4 years and been spending my time writing a book so far and working on the second one now.
Cool.
And one of the things I found out about writing a memoir, which is what I've done, is that I don't have to tell the stories again. I start launching into a story with a friend. Oh, well, let me tell you. No, wait a minute. That's in chapter 6, page 42. So it's really nice to be able to do that. Oh, I reference this, and that prompts me to want to tell new stories, find new things to talk about. So
right.
Today you and I were talking earlier, and
yeah.
Kind of was thinking about what I could share with you that's new. And this story that we'll have today is a true story, of course. It's never been published, never been broadcast. So this will be the first time that more than two guys in a cockpit of an airplane got to hear that story.
Yeah, well, I love those kind of stories. I interviewed a commercial pilot who was actually a friend of mine. He flies for a company here in Canada called WestJet, and he told us a harrowing story of losing all trim on his one of his student flights.
You know, that's yes, I heard that podcast, and that was that can get your attention.
Yeah, no kidding.
Like him, I spent most of my aviation career flying airliners, and retired with Delta Airlines.
Right,
like I said, a few years back. So,
so tell us all about one of them. I guess I call it. Close calls rather than harrowing experiences, but of course
close calls. Okay, yeah, this one is really the story of instant friendship.
Okay, here we go.
And I hadn't thought much about that before this happened, and I've thought about it a lot since, and it's led me to question things about love at first sight. Does that exist? You know, if instant friendship can happen, what about these other things? So, backstory. Before I was an airline pilot, I was doing a lot of other things, flying corporate aviation, and I got bored one year and decided I'd join up with an outfit flying little airplanes to Europe, delivering single-engine airplanes primarily to Europe. Owners would buy an airplane in Europe, most of the manufacturers, of course, in the States. Mm-hmm. We had to get the airplanes to them somehow. Over the years, we found out that if you put the airplanes on a ship, ship them over, there was more damage done than if we just put a lot of fuel on and flew them over.
Really?
So there's a little cottage industry of delivering airplanes to Europe and, matter of fact, around the world. So I did this as kind of a novelty back in the early 80s. And I had done 5 of these trips when I got the call to deliver a Mooney 231 to Europe along. And this was going to happen along with another Mooney that was going over at the same time. So I said, yeah, it'd be great. We two guys get to fly sort of together, not in formation, but loose proximity, and that'd be kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with Moonies at all?
No, sir. I am a bit of an airplane nerd myself, so this is a new one for me.
Moonies were started to be built in the 1950s and developed a reputation right off the bat of being very efficient. Pilots love them. It's like putting on, you put on the airplane, you don't get in it. You put the airplane on. It's very tight, cozy, and super efficient. And most pilots being on the cheap side, we really like that because of low fuel burn.
Of course.
Over the years, they developed the airplane. It became four-seat airplanes and pretty good range, about 5 hours range typically with standard tanks. Well, our mission was to take two of these Mooney 231s, a turbocharged version of the aircraft, to Cologne Bonn Airport in Germany, mm-hmm. originating in Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, Pennsylvania. The airplane normally travels just shy of 200 miles an hour, say 170 knots. It's very efficient, burning about, let's say 9 U.S. gallons an hour. So we were looking forward to a nice ride with a nice turbocharged airplane. Our route of flight was to take us from Wilkes-Barre, Scranton, nonstop to Goose Bay, Labrador. And from there, we'd go over to Iceland and refuel. And from there, we'd go nonstop to Cologne Bonn. That was the plan.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania, I met the other pilot of the other airplane, Ron. And we, we exchanged a few words and said, yeah, let's just stay in close proximity. Maybe we could talk on the radio, see how things are. Weather was pretty good. A little icing reported at some lower altitudes up over the St. Lawrence. But otherwise, weather looked pretty good for the first leg up to Goose Bay. Now we took off and everything was fine. Ron in his airplane and I was in mine, and things were going just fine until we got over northern New York. And icing did develop at lower altitude, so I decided it would be a wise decision to climb up above the icing level, getting clear air again. The airplane being turbocharged, this is no problem at all. It could have the capability of flying into the 20,000 feet altitudes. There's an issue with oxygen at those altitudes for the pilot, but the airplane is perfectly capable. So I climbed up to 11,000 feet. So did Ron. He was behind me and traveled along at 11,000 feet for, let's say 40 minutes or so. And the airplane started to miss, started to cough.
Uh-oh.
And the airplane would shudder. So this is not good. Okay, it coughed. How long before it coughs again? 5 minutes.
Okay.
A little while later, it was coughing every 4 minutes. The trend was not good. So I told Ron, I said, hey, look, I think I'm going to duck into the nearest airport here. By this time, we were north of the Gaspé Peninsula, and the closest airport was Baie-Comeau.
Oh, Baie-Comeau. I have relatives in Baie-Comeau. How's that?
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. And a lovely community. Brian Mulrooney is from Baie-Comeau.
There you go. You got it.
Right the north.
He passed away just last week.
Oh, no. My condolences to
there you go.
All Canadian, my Canadian friends. Baie-Comeau, situated, as you know, is on the north shore of the St. Lawrence River, just southwest of Seven Islands, Sept Îles. One of the most beautiful places on earth.
Been there too.
Well, today Baie-Comeau was not particularly attractive. It was a little bit foggy. It was overcast. I decided to do an instrument approach into Baie-Comeau, find a mechanic and see what was going on. So I told Ron what I was doing. He says, well, I'll go into Baie-Comeau with you. I don't have an instrument approach chart for it, but I'll come. The weather wasn't that bad. The ceiling was pretty high. So I gave him the rudiments of the instrument approach and landed the airplane. And then Ron followed in a few minutes later. We did find a mechanic. This was a Friday, I think. So it was still a work day. Found a mechanic who spoke no English. And without the aid of Google Translate, this was 1981, I think.
Okay.
We got the problem over to him with a bunch of pantomime and got the message across what the airplane had been doing. So he took the magnetos apart. Magnetos are kind of like the distributors in old cars. They are the devices that provide the spark to the spark plugs. And he took the magneto apart and found that it was full of carbon. It's kind of carboned up. So I called then the factory, the Mooney factory in Kerrville, Texas, and lucky, about 6 o'clock down there by the time we got the phone call through, somebody was still there and said, "Hey, here's the story. I've got one of your brand spanking new Moonies here, and we're on our way to across the Atlantic Ocean to Cologne. And here's what it's doing." He said, "Oh, we're familiar with that problem." He said, "When the airplanes get to higher altitude, the air gets thin and it reduces the resistance between points in the magnetos, and it starts to arc. Basically, a little lightning bolt goes across from point to point.
Yep.
And as it does that, it develops a carbon track. And as the carbon gets laid on thicker and thicker,
it starts to miss more. Yep.
He said, "But we've never had one quit." I said, "Well, have you ever had one run 9 or 10 hours on its way to Europe after it started to miss?" He said, "Well, no, we haven't. But tell you what you can do. You take the back of the mags off." He said, "You already had them apart." He says, "And take some carbon tetrachloride and clean them out real good. And then stay at low altitude. Don't get above 10,000 feet and you'll be just fine."
We'll return to our conversation with Russ Roberts right after these sponsor messages. And now back to 1001 True Stories with Brian Tremblay.
I said, "Okie dokie." So that's what we did. And I got the mechanic put the thing back together and we did the logbooks and we blasted off for the remainder of the ride up to Goose Bay, Happy Valley Airport in Labrador. Fortunately, the weather was pretty good. The clouds were lower on that leg, and I could motor along at 9,000 feet just fine, and the airplane purred beautifully. No problems at all.
Nice.
Landed at Goose Bay, Happy Valley. And usually, Brian, on these ferry trips, we were charging pretty hard because there was usually some crummy weather coming in behind us. So we'd already spent a full day getting up that far, and the idea now is just to refuel and keep on going because bad weather was moving in behind us from Quebec.
Okay.
So we couldn't spend the night there. We just keep going. So loaded up the airplanes with fuel and off we went again. Well, out over the Labrador Sea, once again, the clouds started to thicken up and I had to climb and I had no choice but to climb up to 11,000 and then to get out of the ice up to 13,000.
Oh boy.
By now I was halfway between the shore of Labrador and the west coast of Greenland, right in the middle of the Labrador Sea. Uh-huh. You can imagine what's starting to happen. It's now dark.
Cough, cough.
Cough, cough, cough. Okay, there's the first one. Didn't want to turn around. It was, couldn't. The weather had gotten really bad back in Labrador by this time. Again, like it always did, it seemed, on those trips. So I started writing down the time of the coughs. I would write down, it's 11 o'clock, first cough, next cough, 11:07. So I started logging them. I didn't say anything over the radio to Ron, who had taken off about 5 minutes behind me. Just kept it to myself for a while.
So can I ask regards to these coughs, Russ, are they very violent or do you just something minor in that you hear?
It was a loud engine cough, like the engine swallowed a mouthful of water, that.
It was enough to
shake the engine on its mounts, which then transmitted to the airplane. And it was definitely attention getting.
Okay.
And as it continued to cough. The coughs got worse and it got even more attention getting. Middle of the night. I mean, it was dark and we were now probably 100 miles off of Prince Christiansund, which is the southern point of Greenland. There's a non-directional radio beacon there we were using for navigation. Remember, this is days way before GPS. Loran C had kind of come out, but we didn't have that either. So we were using these old-fashioned radio beacons to navigate by. So finally, when the coughing got about 30 seconds apart, I gave a call to Ron. I said, "Hey, Ron, it's coughing again." He says, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "Oh, about 30 seconds apart." Well, we can't go down because it's still solid undercast and icing is bound to, you know, if we're going to ice it now, if the wings ice up, we fall into the ocean. I mean, that wasn't much of a choice.
Okay.
Yeah. And his airplane was doing fine. I had no choice. I had to continue on to Iceland. And if we could, we were going to descend, but at this point I couldn't descend. So I just had to sit there and let it cough. And I have to tell you, Brian, I was contemplating my mortality.
I suppose, eh?
It was the middle of the night. We were still over the ocean. The only land was the ice-crusted Iceland, Greenland to the north. At the second largest island in the world with the 10,000 feet ice cap on it. And the water at that time of year was right at 0 degrees Celsius, salt water, of course. It wasn't frozen. So if the engine quit, I was going to have to descend through icing conditions and ditch in the middle of the night in the ocean.
Jeez.
And the ships in the area had been reporting 20 to 25 foot swells. And it wasn't something I was looking forward to. Let me describe how I was dressed.
Well,
go ahead.
You can tell us how you're dressed. My concern is now, what do you have on board that can accommodate that ditch into the water? Do you have the great covered tent that they have on that covers some of those life rafts, or
the life raft I had was open. It was a small two-man life raft. Mooney being a very small airplane, you can only put so much gear in it. Okay. So my life raft was an open life raft with some rudimentary survival gear in it. Some, a liter of water and some Chiclets and maybe a candy bar. And but I had been sitting in my North Sea oil rig worker survival suit. It looks like a Gumby suit.
The Gumby suits, yes.
Yep, orange Gumby suit. And because the airplane was so small and there was no way to put it on while sitting in the airplane, we would get into the Gumby suit before we left, before we took off. Put our legs in it, sit down in the seat, and then flop the arms and the top of the Gumby suit on the back of the chair. And then if we had to ditch, it got to that point, you just run our hands down the arms and zip it up, put the hood on, and then fly the airplane like Gumby and ditch in the water and hope for the best. Mooney is a pretty tough airplane. So even in that kind of condition that night, there's a pretty good chance the airplane would stay together for the ditching. But
So what are you wearing? This is you have the Gumby in line and ready?
I had the Gumby suit on halfway. It was over the back of the seat. The arms are ready to go.
Yeah.
I had my emergency locator transmitter tucked inside the Gumby suit. That's a little transmitting radio that transmitted on the emergency frequencies.
Yeah.
So that the C-130s from Canada could come and triangulate and figure out where I was, hopefully, if it worked. So that was there. I had, I had to survival gear in the life raft. Hopefully that wouldn't get away from me as we went out the airplane door. Hey, that would have been a heck of a night, huh, if that had happened.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So, the airplane is continuing to miss. And I told Ron, I said, I'll be able to tell you if it quits. So it makes me feel good. At least, that I'm up here and having a spot of difficulty. Well, I want to tell you, Brian, something happened. And I was feeling kind of alone, even though I had Ron you know, maybe 30, 40 miles away.
No kidding.
I was somebody to talk to, but I was still feeling pretty alone because if that airplane went in the water, it was just going to be me. And the great ocean with the nearest land-based person being, you know, 150, 200 miles away, it kind of makes you, well, as I said before, it makes you contemplate mortality.
Mm-hmm.
So this went on for a while, and I was feeling pretty low. I mean, I can't ever remember feeling more vulnerable, maybe just, but like this, you know, I'd done these trips. I think that's, like I said, my fifth or sixth ocean trip, and every one of them, save one or two, it had some event happened that could have led to dying. I mean, yeah. Why did I do that? That's another question. So all of a sudden I'm feeling low, logging the times that this thing's missing. You know, when's it going to just miss and never keep
start
running
again? Yeah. Yeah,
the guy promised we've never had one quit. So I was carrying that with me. And Ron said, "Hey, Russ, turn on all your lights." So I lit up the airplane. He says, "Yeah, I see you out there. Yeah, I could see you." He said, "Yeah, I'll just put I'll pour the coals to it a little bit. Just give me a few minutes." And within a few minutes, there he was, winking and twinkling off my left side. You know, not that close, but close enough. I mean, yeah. You know, several hundred yards away, he was sitting there just having that airplane with Ron in it. Boosted my morale astronomically. Did it change the situation? Not a bit, but having that close human being who was caring enough about me to join up on me and just fly along and be able to watch as I augured into the, there was just something about that just boosted my spirits and in that moment I felt this wonderful friendship, like this was a brother, like somebody I'd known my whole life, and like one of my second grade friends that I had known forever and been close to, but same intense feeling of friendship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he stayed with me and he stayed there and we flew on the airplane. When we got past Greenland, the clouds, top of the clouds went down. I was able to descend. So the missing started to go away, although it coughed and spit all the way to Iceland again.
Oh my.
Yeah. So it was just something else. And to be able to land in Iceland later, have Ron park his Mooney right beside me, get out of the airplane, took the Gumby suits off, walked over, just shook hands, you know, just,
yeah.
There was that intense feeling of, it must be, I've never been in combat, but it must be akin to the, you know, you've heard about the guys in the foxholes being together.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was like that, just this, this bond of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that imagine. Feeling that it, and it happened immediately. It was like, this is friendship. Well, we wound up taking the airplanes from there on to Cologne Bonn. I would say because the weather had gotten better, I was able to stay at 9,000 feet maximum on down to Europe. Everything worked out fine. And then Ron and I flew together on a DC-8 back to Kennedy that day. And that's the last I ever saw Ron Ancorati, the last time I ever spoke to him. But that 43 years ago this happened.
Wow.
And it's as vibrant and as real and as meaningful as any relationship, friendship I've ever had.
Yeah. So of all the situations that you found yourself in that weren't exactly positive when it comes to flying, have you ever had the moment where you have to put it down and you didn't put it down where you wanted to put it down? You just had to make do with what you had?
Let me think. I have never had an off airport landing except in the seaplanes. I've gone to places where I didn't expect to be, but I didn't, but I've never landed in a field, a road, never had to put it in the water except for the seaplanes by intention. No, so yeah, there have been changes in plans, but never anything that's Yeah. That I've never, knock on wood, never scratched the paint in now 54 years of flying. I've never scratched the paint.
Right.
Nobody's ever gotten hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you about that Mooney, a little backstory here.
Sure.
Okay. The guy down, and remember, I'd been talking to the guy at the factory.
Yep.
And this is, I had this feeling of friendship that developed between Ron and I, but I always had this, also had this feeling so this is how corporations work.
Oops.
When I was talking to the guy, he's down in Texas. He said, yeah, we know about that problem. Yeah. At high altitude, the magnetos start to arc. And so, Lycoming, the manufacturer of the company, and we have worked together to develop this pressurized magneto. It actually pressurizes the air inside the magneto, creates denser air, so the arcs don't develop.
Nice.
He said, but unfortunately, we ran out of those and knew your airplane had to go to Europe. So we had some old ones on the shelf and we put those in. Jeez. Thanks a lot, buddy.
Yeah, no kidding. It's like conspiring against you here to make sure you're going to really shake this thing out.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ever had any of those, and I don't know how many flights you did delivering those planes after that, but have you ever had any where it was like, nope, it ain't going to make it kind of thing? And you had to either turn around or put it somewhere else?
Yeah. Okay. Here's an example. Page 3 in the book.
Page 3. The prologue. Okay. Get right into it.
It starts right off the bat. The book is called Unlearning to Fly, yes. Navigating the Turbulence and Bliss of Growing Up in the Sky.
There you go.
And I start with one of those ferry flights to Europe. And it is, I wind up somewhere where I didn't expect to be.
And tell us in the world of modern navigation equipment, how does that happen to one? If you got it pointed in the right direction, but you end up somewhere else, or you think you do.
Again, this was an interesting trip. This was my first solo trip across the Atlantic Ocean, and I was over the Labrador Sea again. We got in turbulence that I had not seen before or since. My directional gyro, which is a gyroscope that you keep lining up on the magnetic compass heading, and it's more stable. Mm-hmm. And more user friendly than a wet compass, the compass that floats in the liquid. Well, my directional gyro had kind of not working very well, and in the turbulence, my compass fell apart. So I had no way to tell exactly what direction I was heading. I was able to tune in a radio station after a while. Mind you, this turbulence, well, it's in the book. It's described in the book. It was horrible. I couldn't even read the instruments. They were shaking so bad. I couldn't tell what the numbers were.
Aye.
And I was putting my faith in the engineers back at Cessna that they had tightened those bolts. but managed to get a radio beacon lined up, and I didn't care where it was. It could have been in Russia and I would have tracked it in, but it turned out to be, I eventually identified it as Greenland and went in there and got things fixed. But
gotcha.
Yeah, that was, you know, Brian, I should have quit that ferry flying business right then and there.
But you know what, Russ, I look at it this way. If I'm going to have a pilot, I want a pilot like you, because you seem to be calm no matter what's going on, but you got a plan and you come out of it. You know,
I was talking
close to the pilot that I would be like, oh, my God, panic. That's it. I'm done. Pull out my pistol and end it.
Yeah, I doubt that. But, you know, what happens is that, you have an initial plan. If you start to lose instruments or equipment or weather goes bad, it's like, OK, what do I do now? I can't do this. I've got to come up with another plan. You never give up.
Yeah,
you never give up. You know, those guys, I don't know if you remember, it was Alaska Airlines MD-80 off California that lost their trim control and the airplane wound up upside down. And
yes,
it was fatality. And the airplane went augured into the water.
Yeah,
those guys were working the problem right up into the second before impact. They never gave up. They were looking for, okay, what can we do? Can we do any? And I think it's like that for most pilots. You just, is it training? Is it inclination? I don't know, but you just continue to work the problem and try to get a good resolution out of it.
And away you go. Yeah. Outstanding stories, Russ. Outstanding. Tell the folks about the book and tell about where they can find out about the book and you and how to get it. And away we go.
Well, there's a website, CaptainRussRoberts.com, C-A-P-T, Russ Roberts, all one word, lowercase.com. It has all the links to where you can get the book, the usual places. It's on ebook. It's in print. We're still working on the audio book. That hasn't come out yet, but it's cool. Called Unlearning to Fly, Navigating the Turbulence and Bliss of Growing Up in the Sky. It tells us my origin story, some people have called it. How did I want to become a pilot? And how did I, it takes us up to the day that I got my job as an airline pilot. How did I get to that point?
Yeah. Outstanding.
It's got a lot of flying stories in it. And yeah, so it was fun to write.
That's awesome. All right. Captain Russ Roberts, thank you so much for that story. It'll just add to my nervous flying next time I have a plane.
No, have it give you confidence because, you know, hey, we're sitting here, we're healthy.
If there's a problem, they're working that problem.
And remember, the paint was never scratched.
There you go. Thank you very much. Russ, thanks again for coming on.
It was my pleasure.
Thanks again for joining us on 1001 True Stories with Brian Tremblay. If you think you have a harrowing, scary, strange, frightening, or life-changing story that happened to you and would like to share it on the program, email me at brian@morinstreetmedia.com. That's brian@morinstreetmedia.com. The link is in the show notes. We enjoy reviews as well as you sharing our show with others. There will be new stories from more people who have been to the edge and back every Sunday at noon Eastern Time. Until next Sunday, this is 1001 True Stories with me, Brian Tremblay. Everyone's got a story. What's yours?
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.